Welcome to the Leverage Ladies Podcast with Linda McKissick and Shannon Dagger. Each episode of this show, we will take on conversations about the biggest assets you have working for you, your team members. We will hear stories and conversations from successful business leaders, authors, and executives, and learn how they have used leverage to grow and expand to the next level. If you are looking to grow or expand your business, this is the show for you. Now, let's talk leverage.
Welcome to the Leverage Ladies. This is a podcast where we have inside conversations with top experts and business owners about their journey to finding leverage, growing their organization, and achieving work-life balance. These are perspectives and stories you will not hear anywhere else. We are your hosts, Linda McKissick and Shannon Dagger. We are business owners and business partners who've committed to leveraging our way to freedom so that we can achieve financial peace and have a life by design. As lifelong learners who run multiple organizations, we know that you can achieve more by focusing on building organizational support and leverage. To go along with these interviews each week, we are putting together a roadmap for you to follow along as you are implementing leverage into your business. Our speakers will be sharing documents and resources with you as well. Be sure to listen to the end every week to find out where you can find each week's piece of the roadmap. We highly encourage you to check out the resources. Now let's get started. Well, hello, everybody. We're excited today to be talking to Jeff Kuhn. I'm Shannon Dagger, and I am here with Linda McKissick, and we are excited to talk with Jeff about leverage. Jeff, I'm going to just like take from Linda's playbook, and Linda's really good at saying you were born and. Tell us a little bit your short story of you were born and then what?
Wow, that's taking it back. So
short version.
No doubt. Yeah, you're born and early part of my life, I jumped around and lived in like 10 different places in 10 years. And as I was kind of getting settled in, my early foray into leadership was class president, you know, as a ninth grader in high school. And I remember running just because I could see that the other president, you know, in my opinion, just wasn't going to do the right thing. They were running for popularity and not to help people. And I had a bit of a rough childhood. And with that, I've always had this desire and yearning to work with people and help people and be better. So it started there, moved into Chuck E. Cheese. You know, I got to dress up as a costume rat for about 10 years and was one of the first trainers hired for a new opening store. Moved my way into leadership and into management with them. And then went up and down the East Coast, opening up Chuck E. Cheese locations and hiring a ton of 16 to 24-year-olds and just having some fun. After that, I got into retail through Hasbro, GameStop, EB Games, Lumber Liquidators, and moved into tech sales through SolarCity, Tesla, and Vivint Smart Home, and grew teams through most of those organizations from about 20 people at my smallest level. And then inside of Tesla and channel management, we had about 1,500 people working inside of the channel stores that reported to me. And then I circled around into this little thing called Keller Williams in real estate. I was hired by an OP to be the TL of a location and their CEO for an office. And so I ran a local franchise here for about a year and a half. And my big goal there was I looked at the companies I'd worked for and I realized, hey, I've made some of these guys enough money. Elon and Todd don't need any more money from us. But I was seeing the small businesses locally in my sphere. Some were being successful and some were really struggling. Mm-hmm. And I realized that with the background that I had and the experience that I had, that I could lean in there and help any of them should they choose to develop some systems and processes and learn how to grow, especially when it came to hiring people. Through all the new unit openings that I did over the years, I can't think of many people that have interviewed more than I have, that it isn't their specific job of being a recruiter, right? Like you open up a new location for a Chuck E. Cheese, you interview about 500 kids in the course of about 6 weeks, you know, and opening up new GameStops and launching retail programs and Tesla and Vivint. I interviewed thousands. At one point, I flew out to Salt Lake City 6 months straight every single week just to interview district managers for the retail chain we were launching. So pretty crazy.
And currently, you're coaching, correct? Public speaking.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm an owner inside of a Cyberbacker franchise. So Maryland, okay. DC, Delaware is the franchise market that we own. I also do public speaking through bemoreeveryday.com or jeffkuhn.com. And I am an executive leadership coach. I focus primarily on people who are growing their business through leverage. That's my passion. That's my dream. I really believe that the purpose of a leader is to help their people grow. when you can provide opportunities for growth inside of your team and lead them and guide them and push them in a direction that they're achieving what they want to in life, then the paradox there is your business grows too, right? Like, I didn't get into it to see my business grow. And crazy enough, as I helped my people grow, I was given more opportunities.
Wow, very interesting. That's a lot of time on task with all those interviews. What are some of the biggest lessons you learned from putting all those teams together?
If I was to say, again, with that goal in mind of really helping your team grow, the first thing that I'd say I realized is how to figure out when they're a non-fit. It's a horrible thing to say out loud, Linda, and it's true. Is in high pressure sales and in major growth environments, I used to actually tell my district managers if they didn't make the salesperson cry in the interview or come close to crying, they probably didn't interview them hard enough. That sounds really callous. But we were in a high performance environment. And in that high performance environment, we needed people to understand the expectations and the standards. And when we interview people and we find people that we like, and I interviewed a guy one time whose name was Jeff Kuhn. I thought they were pranking me. I thought somebody was literally trolling me. This kid comes in, his name's Jeff Kuhn. He's got the same birthday on his resume, kid you not. And I look at him, I'm like, well, you're hired. And I guess we should still have an interview. Fortunately for me, he turned out okay. He actually did a pretty good job. But what I found is a lot of times we hire people that we like, they're not necessarily a fit for the job. They blow us away in the interview. They're a really good interview. They seem to have a lot of charisma. They say the right things. But then when it comes down to it, they don't do the right things inside of the work. And what starts to break my heart there is a lot of times when we're interviewing somebody, they are quitting a job to come work with me.
Yes.
When that happens, if they're not a good fit, all of a sudden, you know, and I get tingles when I say this kind of stuff because it really just hit me from emotion. All of a sudden, I just really messed up their life by just taking a nonchalant chance on somebody that wasn't the right fit for the role. So I really feel as if I've got an obligation to set expectations at a very high level and to make sure that they understand that if they don't meet the expectations, that they won't be with me 90 days from now. And do they want to take a chance to work with me and have an amazing opportunity and to do some amazing things together? If that could be the outcome, should they not do the job as we've set it up for them to understand? I'd say that's the biggest thing is when I realized that all of a sudden from the interview process, things started to change. Like you started to see people that were coming in with a zest to achieve. Sometimes they still didn't work out. A lot of times they did. But when they didn't work out, they still walked away from it looking at me and saying, thank you, because we had the right conversations in the beginning, had the right conversations week to week. They knew I was in their corner the whole time, giving them everything they needed to do to succeed. If they didn't do it, they just knew, hey, I had my shot. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And they still walked away referring business to us and still keep in touch today.
Well, I love that. What were some of those expectations?
It depends on the job. Usually it had to do with the lead generation activity. So leading indicators and lagging indicators of the job. So inside of sales performance positions, what's the size of your database? What are your day-to-day lead generation activities? How are you generating referrals? You know, it's the lowest ROI piece to building your business, right? Is getting a referral. So how are you generating referrals? How many deals are you closing each month? What's the minimum expectation? Always a red flag for me in an interview is when somebody asks that question, actually, is what's the minimum expectation? Because what does that mean?
Well, your minimum is always going to be somebody else's maximum.
Exactly. Because when somebody's asking about the minimum, it means that they just want to know how much they can do to skate by and to keep their job. And I wanted to find people in an interview process that were looking for how much can I make? Is there a cap? That's a better question. Is there a cap on my income? You know, do you have a commission structure set up and the harder I work, the more I make? Absolutely. Let's talk more about that. And so inside of that, I'm actually a little bit different than a lot of other sales companies where a lot of my peers were inside of the channel world that I worked in. We would actually assign people in our channel partnerships to go work at Home Depots and Lowe's and Best Buys and Sprints and all sorts of other different companies that were out there. They'd go into the stores, they'd work, they'd do lead generation. The lead generation was either for themselves to set up appointments or for a salesperson on the other end to set up an appointment for them. And companies I worked for and most of my peers, their method of operation was you go in, you work 8 hours, see how many leads you can set up in that period of time. And I was the opposite. I was like, well, we know our number. We know how many leads we need. And so I would let my people know the opposite, which was go in, set the number of leads that you need in order to hit your number for the week. If you can do that in half an hour, great. You just only worked half an hour. Those retail stores don't want us there anyway. They'd much rather just do their operations and not having to worry about some third-party vendor hanging out on site that could potentially irritate a customer. So go in, set your number of leads, and then get out. Go hit the lead generation hard, set the number of appointments that you need in order to build the business that you need to build, and then go about your day and get some things done. And that way you're rewarding people for the practice that they're doing, the activities that they're doing. Because if they're setting the right number of leads with the right conversion, they're closing the right number of deals. If they're closing the right number of deals, they're happy, I'm happy, and the world goes around, right?
What do you think the biggest problem is with business leaders as you're coaching and talking to people in terms of leverage and being successful with it?
The biggest hesitation I run into with business leaders is, can I afford the next salary? That always seems to be the first question that pops up. And I can't blame them. It's their checkbook, right? There's always some concern there.
And what is your answer to that?
The answer is an equation. It's going to be a little bit different for everybody, but the equation comes down to, first off, what task are you hiring them for? This is all a part of building out your long-term org chart. If you're only working from an organization chart that's 1 year deep, you're not thinking big enough. We want to be thinking big. Many of us that have read The One Thing or Begin with the End in Mind, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, right, through Stephen Covey. As we begin with the end in mind, if we're looking far enough forward, we've got an org chart that's 5 years or 10 years or 15 years in the future, right? We already know what we want our business to look like 10 years from now. And so if we reverse engineer that down to who we need today, we should be able to assign out and break down the tasks that are needed in order to grow our business. And then from an 80-20 rule, what's the one position on that list that's going to make the biggest difference inside of your company? Once you've identified that position and we've assigned the task to that position, what tasks are they taking off of your plate? What tasks are you doing? What tasks are they doing? Which are the revenue generating tasks? How many hours are they freeing up in order to allow you to focus on revenue generating? And when you've determined those numbers, then we just need to ask ourselves the basic rule, which is how much more sales do you need to be able to generate based on hiring that position to pay for that person, right? So if it's a task they're taking away from me or away from my sales team, then that gives my sales team more time to generate on building sales. If they're charged with building sales, that's much easier math, right? Because literally their deals close as a translation to their salary and how much they're making. Otherwise, we're looking at the number of hours freed up for the rest of the team and how many deals needs to be closed to cover that. Now, the big factor there, though, is I don't want to just break even. Because if I'm just breaking even, it's probably not worth the headache. Hiring somebody to just break even just doesn't feel productive. And so what's the return on that investment? How much more do I need to make and be able to add to the profit line in order to look at the future growth of the company? Because again, we're looking 10 years out, at least 5 years out. And where do I need to have that money in order to hire for that next hire? And so that's one of the things that we'd figured out was that equation. Like, we knew that in order to pay for the salary for our salespeople and all the install people and everything else on side of a solar deal or whatever, they needed to do 5 deals a month to cover all the costs, plus have a little extra. And so 5 was the minimum to keep their job. And again, we were looking for 7 with the referrals and the higher ROIs in order to get our cost of acquisition down. And so if they could at least keep 5, they kept their job and then obviously got paid a lot more. And that's how we set our comp plan. And at a certain level, the comp plan would dramatically increase to encourage them to work harder.
Career visioning is probably one of the greatest processes I've ever seen for hiring. And I've even had people come from outside industries and go, oh my God, if I'd have had this in my other world. But I'm just curious, because you've got so many under your belt, right? And that's how you get masterful at something. Has there been any extra things or techniques that you've learned that you've added? Or do you just use career visioning? Or have you found other things to add to help you try to pinpoint people's unique ability, whether they can do the job, all those things?
I love that question. Yes, and yes, and yes. And the first thing I'll say there is I very quickly learned at a point in my career how many people interview poorly, right? And I think to your point on mastery is when I started teaching people from a classroom perspective on how to interview and started realizing all the people in the room that assumed a great answer was a great answer because it was delivered energetically. Like, you'd do a little mock interview and you'd ask people how it would go. And they were like, that was an amazing interview. I'd hire that person. It was just because the person gave all the answers energetically. That was the point of the exercise. And the answers were horrible answers. Like, we intentionally gave horrible answers and they still wanted to hire them just because it was an energetic answer. And then we did the reverse. We gave great answers, but with low energy. And they never wanted to hire that person. And it was like, okay, Yes, I actually love the career visioning process, the KPA, the NPA, the CBPA, all the people using that system. A couple of things about it, like the vision setting towards the end from an HR perspective, I like doing that one after I hire them, just to make sure I don't touch on questions that could possibly be illegal. And for any small business owner, the ability to hand somebody a packet and say, these are the questions that you should go through and write down their exact answers, that's the best process that a small business owner that has not had a lot of interview practice could just grab and take and walk away from that I've ever encountered. And when I started my own small business after working with Keller Williams, I started using that for my own small business, by the way, right? Like I was using that process. And the big reason for that is, again, from a helping people perspective, I've so often seen people walk away from that interview process, again, whether they get the job or not, thanking me because they feel as if they've grown just going through the interview process. They've learned themselves better. That's so cool to me. You know, from that though, I'd say the piece that I've layered on top of it, there's probably two pieces that I would layer on top of that. And the first one is that companies should really identify their core values prior to even beginning the interview process. Because if you haven't outlined your core values, it doesn't matter whether they're a fit for the job. They might not be a fit for your culture. You're going to have some companies that are really out there looking for that rebel, those people that love to break the rules, and other people that love to stay in the straight line. And if you don't know if you're looking for a rule breaker or a straight line driver, then it doesn't matter how close of a fit they are a match inside of that personality assessment. They're not going to be a fit for your company, right? So that's the first one. The second one is, again, just because somebody delivers an answer with energy, it doesn't mean that it's a good answer. And so once you've identified the core values that you really want to find a fit for, and you've written your job description, you should have a series of set questions inside that job description that are core competency questions for that position. And then define what a good answer is, right? If somebody says, yeah, I've done that, this is an example, and then you go to drill in with the why questions and tell me more about that, and they can't get too deep, they don't have many concrete examples themselves, then that should be a red flag and not moving on. If they're able to answer those questions, provide good detail, and give you the information that you want inside the competency that you've selected, then that's usually a good sign. The third piece that goes along with that, if you're in a big enough company, have somebody else grade the answers. And so basically, what does that mean? It means that if my sales director is doing the interview and they walk away influenced by the energy that was brought in the interview, and they are writing the answers down, and then they hand it to me and say, Jeff, oh, this guy's amazing. This gal's amazing. She's going to crush it. I can't wait to get her started. You know, it's kind of like the black hat portion of career visioning, right? Where they're going through the defense. Well, wait a minute, I'm reading through these answers and this person has no viable sales experience whatsoever. Why would you say that she'd be great in this role? And dig into what's on paper, score what's on paper versus the score guide that we'd set up for the core competencies to make sure that they're eligible for the role.
Great points. Love it.
I love that. Having somebody else read your answers. That's great advice. Maybe Linda, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Second person to look at those details. That's fantastic. I don't think you have to be in a big organization for that either. It's the same as, like, you know, as we do in career visioning, we bring in a team. If you're on a team, you let the team weigh in. Even as you're a single person, you can have somebody in your office or in your world review the same answers and help you see a little bit more clearly on that.
Amazon's got their 14 leadership principles. So when they're hiring a manager or a leader inside of their company, literally they have a question sheet with about 10 questions per principle that must be asked to anybody being interviewed for a manager job in their role outside of the regular interview process. These are our 14 principles. These are 10 questions about each principle. Ask them the question, write down the answer, and then we'll review it for competencies. So pretty crazy.
That's fantastic.
A lot of the big companies are doing that.
Wow, that's awesome.
So Jeff, if there's one thing that you want everybody to know about you and about what you're doing right now and what you can offer them, what is it that you would want people to know?
If I could wave a magic wand and have one wish, Shannon, it would be that as a leader, we really get behind the purpose of creating growth for our team members. And what does that look like, right? Like, what conversations are you having with your people outside of the initial interview process in order to help them grow weekly? I had a great leader as an 18-year-old. I didn't realize then how much it would set a foundation for me inside of just growth throughout the years. But so many things that he did as a kid, basically really just stuck. And one was having a weekly directional meeting with your team and having a weekly one-on-one with your team, right? And the weekly directional doesn't need to be long. In my opinion, anything that goes into an email doesn't make the meeting, right? Here we are, we're just talking about some very basic things. And the very basic things we should be talking about as a team and as an individual are pretty much the same. What's our goal? How do we do? What obstacles did you encounter? What's the goal for this next week? What are your plans to achieve it? How can I help? That last question being the crucial one, right? Like, we're helping the person to identify, I call it the take five. It's just five questions. That last question being crucial. We're having them identify where they needed to go and how well they did. They're bringing this information to us. I'm not preparing for it. So this is all on them for their own personal development. Where do they need to go moving forward? What's the problem that they're running into? And then when you ask, how can you help? It really clicks through a little thing in their head as to whether or not they actually needed help. Because sometimes that's the excuse that ends up happening on the other end, right? Like, we're running into problems and we think, oh man, if only my boss was here helping me. Why can't she be around more? Why can't he be around more? I can't believe he's not helping me with this. And then you offer help and they're like, well, actually, no, I got this. Like, I got it on my own. We just talk through the obstacles. I realized that I could have done this. There's nothing here that I don't know how to do. I was just running into it in my own head. And so, like, if you can have that 15-minute conversation with your people one-on-one each week, and then as a team, as a whole, so all the departments come together and can talk about where they might be running into other things. Because sometimes it's that blame game too. When you're hiring lead setters versus lead runners, like the appointment setters versus the people closing the deals, there's so many finger pointings, I can't even tell you. But you bring them all together in a meeting and all of a sudden nobody wants to point fingers, right? Like, you ask them what obstacles they're running into, and sometimes there's some little back and forth that happens. But in the end, we're all moving forward because we all have the same goal and we all want to achieve. And the lead setters do better when the lead closers close the deals, and the closers do better when the lead setters do better. And the ops do better when we're all setting up right expectations, no matter what the job is. So when you have a team meeting to set the direction and a one-on-one meeting to individually break down direction, provide feedback downward and upward, it just makes it so much easier for the company to make sure that they're continuing to move in the right direction. I think that the side piece to that is, I modified this a couple of years ago and turned my take five form into a take seven form. And that's including a personal goal too. And inside business coaching, I've realized that most of the clients that hire me because they don't have a clear enough picture surrounding what they want to achieve personally and around what they want to achieve in business. Again, they know where they're heading, but it's not clear enough that they can create concrete steps to get there. And if you don't attach that to something personally, then they lack the motivation.
Good point.
And as a leader, if I don't know their motivation and I can't help them get to their motivation, like my growth backer and Cyberbacker, her motivation is she wants to create enough income inside of Cyberbacker that she can produce her own album. She wants to put out an album. It's her goal within a year now. When we first started working together, it was a 5-year goal. We've worked together for a year and now it's a 1-year goal.
That's cool.
She's already put out some singles at Shara Josel on Instagram and TikTok. She's already put those out and she plans on producing her own album within the year.
Well, I agree. As a business leader and any individual that's leading a team, you need to know what your vision is and you need to have clarity on it before you begin anything else. If you can't, how can you ask everybody else to buy into the vision and take part in it if you can't even quantify it or share it with them and have that as a shared vision? So I completely agree with you that that is a great starting point and something that we have to learn to gain clarity on. And I don't think a lot of people do. I think they start off with this one thing of, I'm going to start a team and I want to make money. And through making money, I'm going to provide for my kids. And they think that's their motivation. But then all of a sudden, within a year or two, if they're really a go-getter and they can talk to a lot of people, they're already making money. But then they're like, well, I don't really know anymore what I want to do. And so I think a large part of that is teaching them to think big and think bigger. Linda, you're really good at that, I think. And thinking just beyond, we always think in these goals that maybe I think life has kind of shoved on us in terms of, like, I mean, when I was a kid, I thought $1 million was a lot of money. And now that I'm turning 50 this year, I know $1 million ain't nothing because I can't retire with it. It's not enough, right? So if somebody had taught me, hey, $100 million is a lot of money, that's what I would be thinking to achieve, right?
And yeah, the 10X.
And I could retire if I thought $100 million. But now I'm thinking even bigger than that. So that is very important to gain clarity on your vision and make sure your vision's big enough for the long game so that your team can buy in and hit those goals along the way.
I had a client hire me just about 2 years ago. It's actually 2 years this month. And he hired me because he wanted to figure out how to have breakfast with his children. He told me that as a business owner. He's like, I never see my family. If I could just get breakfast with my kids 2 days a week, I'll be a lot happier. He's like, I leave before the sun comes up. I come back after the sun's gone down and they're heading to bed. So that's why he hired me. I'm like, okay, let's create some clarity around this. And, you know, let's look far in the future. So his five-year vision, he wanted to do a two-week family vacation, all expenses paid in advance, nothing on debt, to Europe for a five-year plan. It was 9 months later, he and his family went to France, all paid in advance, and he left his business behind, right? So this is a year ago now. This year, he's on a month vacation right now. Wow. Shannon, I've got two other clients that are on a month vacation right now. I've got three coaching clients that literally just gave me the month of August off for them because they're all on a month vacation right now because they've built a business big enough that the business can run itself when they're not there. And that's so exciting to me. One guy hired me because he wanted to sell his company. He wanted to sell his company because he was so frustrated with it. He just needed out. And he had to figure out how to set up the systems and processes in such a way to make it saleable. And he's spending 6 months in Italy about to climb the Matterhorn. And he just told me, he's like, hey, this is the final stretch. I'm going to do it this month. He's like, so I'm giving you a few weeks off so that way I can put more time into focusing on climbing the Matterhorn, right? 6 months in Italy, running a business in California.
For him,
It's so awesome when you get clarity around where you want to go and why that matters to you personally and what you're able to accomplish once you put the steps in place.
So true.
Well, Jeff, thank you for spending time with us today. I really appreciate hearing what you have to say. I know that you and I have talked at length about different career visioning processes and hiring processes. And I always get wisdom from you. So thank you for sharing it with me. I know that when you're speaking and teaching, other people always get something from them too. And so I appreciate you. Linda, did you have any final thoughts or questions?
No, I would just say, where's the best place for people to reach out to you at?
Yeah, so jeff-kuhn.com or find me at Jeff Kuhn on YouTube or LinkedIn, and then Jeffrey Kuhn, R-E-Y, Jeffrey Kuhn on Facebook and Instagram. Any of those places, but just come follow me. Get a daily dad joke. I usually like to make people laugh. Maybe that's a much better reason to
you
be on
You do have good daily dad jokes.
Yeah. And I appreciate the invite. Always good to be in this room with you two. Both inspirations. Thank you.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Jeff. And look forward to chatting with you more. We'll see you next week at Mega Camp, I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. See you then. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great week. See you both there. Thanks, all.
Thank you for listening today. Don't forget to visit our website and download this week's piece of your leverage roadmap at leverageladies.com. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to and share this Leverage Ladies podcast with others. We would love to have you follow us on social media as well. Check out our Facebook and Instagram pages and be sure to follow us for ongoing tips, updates, and information. Remember, the greatest compliment you can give us is to leave a 5-star review so that others are able to find the Leverage Ladies podcast. And again, thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Leverage Ladies podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Once again, thanks for tuning in, and we hope to catch you again in the next episode of the Leverage Ladies podcast. We'll see you then.